It's All Songs Considered from NPR Music. I'm Robin Hilton, and this week we're featuring select episodes from our guest DJ archives. Today, we've got a conversation with Randy Newman. The singer, composer, and pianist recently released his 11th solo album. It's called Dark Matter. Bob Boylan originally spoke with Randy Newman back in 2008 when he released his previous record, Harps and Angels. The two talked about Newman's musical family, how Ray Charles has been the biggest influence in Newman's musical career, and what it was like for Newman to hear the Beatles for the first time. Randy Newman starts off here talking about how it was somewhat inevitable that he wound up making music for a living.
Well, it would seem as if there's some sort of genetic predisposition. You know, two of my cousins are eminent kind of film composers also, Thomas Newman and David Newman. And my, what is the second cousin? I don't know. One of their children, Joey Newman, just got nominated for an Emmy for a TV show, and he's a serious composer, too. It was like a family business. It was something that I saw and that looked like a possible thing, you know. It didn't really look that possible to me when I watched my Uncle Al when I was 7 years old conducting 100 guys. But at least I knew there it was and it existed.
Better than tailoring or making shoes or something.
Well, a composer was my uncle. One of my uncles was the agent for a lot of film composers, and it was for Jerry Goldsmith, for Johnny Williams, and I think it was Goldsmith. He was complaining about Jesus, and, you know, what a job, this is murder, you know, doing this, and sometimes it is. But he was talking about that, and my uncle Mark, who was the agent, he said, "Listen, it's better than threading pipe," and which is what many of us would be doing. Right. Otherwise, sometimes it isn't better than threading pipe. Jerry stopped talking. Yeah.
So since you're playing DJ for it, why don't you pick me something? We start first with something from somebody in your family.
Well, Alfred did some great scores. How Green Was My Valley is a great score. It doesn't exactly depress me to hear how good he was, but people talk, about Corn Gold or Bernie Herman or Prokofiev did great pictures. Al was really, really good. Jeez, and that's a lot of work there, too.
What do you remember? How was it done then? It's so different than now, right?
It was on a big soundstage.
A soundstage, meaning there'd be a big screen and orchestra in front of it?
Orchestra in front of it, and a big wooden stage, you know, like a real traditional movie soundstage. He'd be conducting the orchestra and looking at the picture. So you hear that big pause in there. I don't know whether he meant to wait that long.
Nice.
Or whether he got there a little early. Probably he meant it, because, I mean, he really could conduct and get where he wanted to go. And you'd sit on stage, not in a booth or anything. The booth was like way up a ladder somewhere. And we'd sit there and try not to creak or anything or make any noise and listen.
What about the writing of it? I mean, how would he write? These days you take home, you go maybe on your little computer and you see it on a screen over and over again.
He'd look at it. Look at it a few times with the director, and would decide where the music, I think essentially the composer in those days would decide where the music was. Occasionally a director would say, for instance, John Ford, he wanted Red River Valley in every movie. And Al would, you know, he'd be grumbly and complaining, and God damn it, he had to do Red River Valley again. But the movies turned out well. And then you break it down, and there was a system whereby you knew where you were. They give you little X's at certain points and a streamer, which goes across the screen. And when you want to, when it hits the edge, you want to be there. And so that's the way they did it. And he would write it to a cue sheet, to a time sheet,
so
where they would say, little boy gets up, he takes his few halting steps, you know, 0.43 seconds, and then that's the way you work. And you can still work that way, and I do to some extent. I don't write stuff like that, but I've tried.
What do you remember as a kid listening to music?
It wasn't like a musical household where what we did was watch television every night. Excuse me. I just hit a water bottle. But the...
You were in the TV age in the... You were born in the early 40s, right? So
yeah, I was born in 43. So we got
50s,
television.
But you had, there was rock and roll happening when you were right in the teen years. You were the
that's
first
right.
generation for rock and roll, yeah.
Overnight. there it was, and it was big, just like Elvis Presley was. One day at junior high, everyone was saying, what's an Elvis Presley? and there he was, full blown, in a day. And rock and roll was the same, a Big Joe Turner. But I heard it a little earlier because I would listen to a housekeeper who my mom was sick a lot, brought my brother and I up to some degree. And so we'd hear the Victory Choir, the Gospel Choir, and the radio station. I don't think it was KGFJ at the time in L.A., but anyway, it was an R&B station where we'd hear Big Joe Turner or Big J. McNeely. I'm thinking of all the bigs. But anyway, the first record... I remember having, for sure, I had all the Toscanini symphonies.
That was great rock and roll.
yeah, but I think my uncle gave it to me. And the first score I had, was like when I was 11 or 12, was Beethoven's First Symphony. And Toscanini is still the way I think Beethoven should go. The recorded sound is so bad on his versions, and he's sort of dips out of favor, but because he was so in favor. I mean, it was like classical music was popular during those days when Toscanini and Rubinstein and Heifetz and Horowitz were around. And so I had that first rock and roll record.
Let's listen a little bit of the Toscanini and then play a little bit of some old rock and roll.
Do the opening first movement. Do you have it?
Okay. Yeah.
And it's got a big long chord on the front.
Okay, so this will be Toscanini. This is with the NBC Symphony Orchestra, if I'm not mistaken. Hang on. And let's give a listen to a little.
Thank you.
You said you had the score, so you learned how to read music from your uncles, from school?
No, I started playing piano when I was like 7 and took piano lessons and stuff, and then theory and counterpoint and harmony.
Quite a thing to look at the score of this.
Cool. Yeah, it's not, that's not too hard, you know. Okay. It's it got harder with Boulez, you know, but I remember it as being the first score I had, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then the rock and roll stuff, loved them both?
Yeah.
No conflict.
Loved them both, but listened to rock and roll, you know, from when it came, more often than the classical music station. More R&B, I think, than most kids, because I think kids I knew, almost the whole class, they liked this station, the R&B station in town, KGFJ 1260.
So do you remember going out and buying a record of somebody?
Well, I remember buying, I think I bought 5 singles in my life, and one of them was Saved by Laverne Baker.
She's a Chicago singer, I think.
Is she? She was a gospel singer for sure. I mean, she came out of, I can't remember the gospel group, but that's what she came out of.
Well, let's listen to that Laverne Baker, Saved. Yeah.
I used to smoke, I used to drink, I used to smoke, drink, and that's the hoochie coo. I used to smoke and drink, and that's the hoochie coo. Oh yeah, but now I'm standing on this corner, praying for me and you. That's why I'm saved. I'm saved. People, let me tell you about a kingdom come, you know I'm saved.
Still feel good?
Well, it wasn't a mistake to buy that. You know, like I was afraid something would jump out at me and it'd be, whoa, what did I see in that? But that's great.
It's a great
band.
It's
a fancy record, you know. They take the time to make that Salvation Army sound slightly and wham, wham with bass drum a few times. A real one, not a drum set drum.
I want to take something, the first cut on your record, the title track from Harps and Angels, and mm-hmm. play that. With the bluesy sound of Laverne Baker and then the symphony orchestra in our head. And I think it's sort of all, in some way, shape, or form, twisted 50 years later into this this great tale from this wonderful narrator here. I'll put the whole song on in this show because you got to hear the whole story. you just can't stop the story in the middle.
That's the thing with my music. That's why, you know, I picked a funny medium for what I do. People don't listen like to records like
some
where
do.
They're going to sit down and listen to a whole story.
Some do.
Some do, yeah. But I can tell you exactly how many, because that's how many records I sell. Has anybody seen me lately? I'll tell you why. Has anybody seen me lately? I'll tell you why. I caught something made me so sick that I thought that I would die. And almost did too. First my knees began to tremble. My heart began to pound. My knees began to tremble. My heart began to pound. Stay with me. Out of tune. Lost my equilibrium. Fell face down upon the ground. As I lay down on a cold pavement, tear ran down my face. As I thought I was dying. Boys know I'm not a religious man, but I sent a prayer out just in case. You never know. Lo and behold, almost immediately, I had reason to believe my prayer had been heard in a very special place. But it's what happened. I heard this sound. Yes. Yes. It's harps and angels. Harps and angels coming near. I was too sick to roll over and see him, but I could hear him singing ever so beautifully in my ear. Then the sound began to subside, and it sounded like background singers. Voice come down, not from the heaven above. It's a voice full of anger from the Old Testament, a voice full of love from the new one. The street lit up like it was the middle of the day. And I lay there quiet, listening to what that voice had to say. He said, you ain't been a good man. You ain't been a bad man. But you've been pretty bad. Lucky for you, this ain't your time. Someone very dear to me has made another clerical error, and we're here in a bit of a wild goose chase. But I'm going to tell you a few things that hold you in good stead when it is your time. So you better listen close. I'm only going to say this once. Lay on the table, better keep your business clean. When you lay you on the table, better keep your business clean. Don't want no backstabbing, ass grabbing, you know exactly what I mean. All right, girls, we're out of here. Went into the night. Almost immediately I felt better, and I run here to see you, boy. Cause you know we ain't living right, and while it was fresh, I wanna tell you what he told me. He said, you lay you on the table, but you keep your business clean. You lay you on the table, but you keep your business clean. There won't be no harps and angels coming for you. Be trombones, kettle drums, pitchforks, and tambourines. Sing it like they did for me once. Yes. Beautiful. Wish I spoke French. So, actually, the main thing about this story is for me. It's an afterlife, and I hope to see all of you there. Let's go get a drink.
The cool thing about this song, what made me go, oh, Randy Newman, I'm so happy to hear this record, the story. I had to know how the story ended. There was no way I was going to stop. And there was no way I was just going to skip ahead and see what else was on the record.
That's good.
And the other part was when the knees began to tremble and the heart began to
pound.
The orchestration right at that moment was so good. What are you doing there? Can you explain anything about the chords or
well, it's straight chord. It's a chord out of the. It's got an E flat on the bottom. The first one's a B over it, which is sort of a common chord, but it's in a different key, just coming from under it. And it's trombones, trumpet, maybe harmon mute, and saxophones going away, and some drums banging, blah, 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 blah. And then the second one is triplets. And it worked out. I mean, I've never been that happy about how I wrote for saxophones till recently. Somehow I learned.
Was it hard?
No, I just kept making mistakes. I mean, I was dissatisfied. I once used a bass sax, and it's this big thing. They got to stand on a chair to play it. And you lay it on the floor, and I expected, whoa, man, this is just going to blow the roof off. And it goes, pooh. I mean, I just had it in the wrong place, or there's a good reason why people don't use it. It's better than that. But I mean, the whole thing was, if you write in the staff, if you write in where the books say here's its most effective range, that's what makes them sound good. And I was always looking, oh, I'll push the tenor up a little higher and you'll hear that edge. But I was always wrong. But this time I think I got it right mostly.
Do you do it this way? We're going to have a live concert came out of Los Angeles. Do you have a band with you that helps do that sort of stuff?
That sort of stuff, but it's different. It's very different. It's different kind of sounds they made. And we treated the songs differently. We didn't try and replicate the arrangement necessarily.
Okay. Who else touched you when you turned on that radio, or maybe somebody showed you a score?
Well, most of all, Ray Charles. You know how when people talk about albums, you know, the third cut on this they'll be talking about, the fourth cut on this, the fifth cut. This might be the only album where at one time I knew the order. I never somehow was a giant music fan. I mean, it was too important to me in some ways. But there were rock and roll records and some classical stuff that I loved. And Ray Charles, I loved. To excess. I mean, I love that record, Genius of Ray Charles, and What They Say.
You're the third person come on our show to play DJ. You know, maybe we've done 15 or 20 of these.
Yeah.
And Ray Charles was totally central. Ray Davies is, you know, the Kinks.
Yeah. And, yeah, great writer and a real good guy, too.
And the other is John Waters, the filmmaker.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's...
He is.
I knew a lot of people. It's that, and for composers, a lot of them became composers after hearing Rite of Spring, Stravinsky. That's like two of the big milestones of the, for those of you who remember the last century, yeah.
So pick us a Ray Charles song.
Just for a Thrill.
Just for a thrill. You change the sunshine to rain. Just for a thrill, you filled my heart with pain. To me, you were my pride and joy, but to you, I was merely a toy. Plaything you could toss around at will. Just for a thrill.
Is there any piece of music that you find the love of Ray Charles somehow snuck into your songs?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I sound like it. But I sounded like it the first time I ever opened my mouth to sing. I mean, I may have sounded like it before I heard it. I mean, it's a big influence, there's no doubt, on me. I mean, I'm not trying to sound like Ray Charles. Even English singers, they sing with Southern American accents. It does something good for the vowels, and it sounds better. It sounds better to me if you're, though the Beatles sounded pretty good without doing it. Though McCartney did it, you know, sometimes.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
But my mom had kind of a Mississippi accent. A lot of her family spent their time there. And the woman who brought my brother and I up, in part, when my mom was sick, was from Wharton, Texas, near Houston. And she had a strong, that kind of accent. And we'd hear gospel music that she'd play, my brother and I, when we were really little. But I loved them. Absolutely loved them.
One of my favorite memories in television, and this is so fuzzy because it's probably 35 years ago at this point. So refresh me if you remember.
I got pants that old.
So it's you doing political science on the Dick Cavett Show.
Yeah.
Is that memory right? I mean,
I remember doing the song. I remember I had that song and didn't do it live because I thought it was like too on the nose, I love Tom Lehrer,
yeah.
and I'm somehow related to him, to my mother, some way. But I didn't want to do exactly that, but the song, it worked so well when I did do it live. And actually, it's the kind of thing, you know, when you write something, sometimes you get some real gifts, you know, boom goes London, boom Perry, more room for you, more room for me. I mean, I didn't sit there and say, oh, what am I going to do? That was like, whoa, thank you. And that song, it's a comedy song, and it's, you know, right, sort of an on-the-nose kind of comedy. But it's really good, that song, I thought.
No one likes us, I don't know why. We may not be perfect, but heaven knows we try. But all around, even our old friends put us down. Let's drop the big one and see what happens. We give them money, but are they grateful? No, they're spiteful and they're hateful. They don't respect us, so let's surprise them. We'll drop the big one and pulverize them. Asia's crowded, Europe's too old. Africa's far too hot and Canada's too cold. And South America stole our name. Let's drop the big one, there'll be no one left to blame us. We'll save Australia. Don't wanna hurt no kangaroo. We'll build an all-American amusement park there. They got surfing too. Boom goes London, boom Perry. More room for you and more room for me. In every city, the whole world round, will just be another American town. Oh, how peaceful it will be. We'll set everybody free. Wear a Japanese kimono, babe, to be Italian shoes for me. They all hate us anyhow. So let's drop the big one now. Let's drop the big one now.
When you say that it was a gift, it's that thing that songwriters talk about their music. Some find inspiration. Some will use the word God, and some will use conduit. Can you figure? I mean,
no, just sometimes you get a break. You know, when you're sometimes the blue books, you know, when you're in school and you're taking a test, and all of a sudden you'll hit like a what you think is like, whoa, I'm in the mother load here, where to for hereafter. And you're in something that you're really into and you think you're writing really well, and maybe you are. But it's just like one of those things where it flows, it just goes. It isn't like you're hung up or anything. You can see right to the end. Right when you think of it. On this record, Mitchell Froom happened to be in the room. It was the first time that's ever happened to me in 40 years of doing it. I had an idea for the arrangement thing for the song Potholes that made the song doable for me. It was like a close call whether I was going to do that. I was trying to do it. I was doing a chart and I thought of this tune. Da 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 da. Da, 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 da. Now, I mean, it's not Beethoven 7, but I mean, I was real happy when I thought of it, and I thought of it whole, and there it was. It was right there.
So you just got a lucky break?
It's a lucky break, and it's showing up. You know, if you're there and you're sitting there for hours, sometimes things just fall on you. That's what usually you don't have to tell songwriters that, because they write. They're writing all the time. They'll say, I've got about 100 songs. Usually they're the worst, though. Those guys who say, well, I wrote 100 songs this year. And you listen to a few of them, and they're not editing themselves or something. But if you go every day, you show up, and then a lot of times you're working and can't think of anything, or you're grinding one out. You think this is never going anywhere. And then sometimes you get a break. And like The Natural was that way. When I had to think of something for him to get him around the bases. Mm-hmm. He hits the home run. Da 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 da. And then the da 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 da. That Whoa, when I thought of that, I was real happy because I knew that would get him around there because it was about, I don't know how long. And he hits second base. And it all just really worked out.
And it sounds better on the soundtrack, by the way.
Yeah. I mean, it's not something I would ever put a lyric to and sing, though we did have a lyric. Lenny and I sung it.
Does that help you?
What a guy, that natural, huh?
No, go, keep going.
He says, Lenny, I'll show you, tell you the part Lenny wrote, Warnker. So the song was, oh, what a guy, that natural. Oh, what a man was he. He hit the ball and loved them all. He was bold, he was brave, he was handsome. He was all that a man, and when he wrote this, supposed to be. And that was it. Barry Levinson, it's like a tape of it, I think.
Do you have, when you do themes for soundtracks, does it help you to have lyrics in your head to make?
No.
No, good.
though
there are a lot of people who like to do that.
A lot of guys do that, yeah. On TV shows, you'd hear it. Right. But no, even when they didn't have the lyrics, you'd hear... all the examples I'm thinking of have a tune. You know, my uncle did Daniel Boone. Uh-huh. Daniel Boone was a man. The lyric he would sing was not quite fit for even public radio. But anyway.
Well, take us out on something. One more piece of music. You can go the Chopin route, or you can go the, any way you want to go here.
I can say how much I love Chopin and his preludes, but I would say... Before they were famous, I heard it on the radio, and one of the five singles I bought, two were by the same guy, Bobby Lewis, I think his name was, and he's a New Orleans guy, but I didn't know that. One was named Rockin' Charlie, the other one I can't remember the name of. Laverne Baker thing I bought. I bought something by the Spiders called You're the One. But I bought From Me to You by the Beatles, and I didn't predict there that they would be fairly successful in the future, but I loved the record, so I bought a single of it.
What was it when you heard this thing on the radio made you want to go out and buy it?
The vocal harmony, no doubt. I mean, I like, is there anything that you want, anything I can do?
Yeah,
I mean,
that's the moment
I guess
the song,
I, for one brief moment, I functioned as an actual American and felt what Americans would feel, you know? And I love that. Still do.
That's great. Thanks for doing this.
Oh, it was a pleasure. Yeah. I really enjoyed it. I spend a great deal of time listening to NPR, more than I should, and I'm proud to be on.
Sweet. Well, I was when they sent me the record about 6-8 weeks ago, it was, like I said, it just made me so happy to hear you again. I've been going back listening to all the old stuff that I loved back in the days I worked in record stores.
No, thank you.
It's nice to say something other than I really liked his older stuff.
Yeah, something.
Now you can say I really liked him when he was older.
You wrote when you were 19.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I really liked him when he was older. Is the change there?
I'm glad that you can say that. Believe me.
Thanks a lot, Randy Newman.
Thank you.
Bye bye.
Bye.
Keep you by my side.